Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome in to another episode of the Tool Shed podcast brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 449. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. I'm going to be diving into my brand new top 500 dynasty rankings update in this episode, including some notable risers and fallers. But first, the usual housekeeping. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Cross MLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review on whichever platform you listen on. Those definitely help a lot. You can find all of my content either on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com, or over on Rotoballer, where I write multiple articles every single week. And speaking of Rotoballer, we are running a spring special right now on Rotoballer Premium. If you use my code TOOLSHED at checkout, you'll get a whopping 50% off your premium subscription. Rotoballer Premium is worth the price at full cost, and half off is just a no-brainer. Again, use code TOOLSHED at checkout, and make sure you have that Rotoballer app downloaded on your phone as well for news, updates, content, DFS embedding, so much more. Great app, great premium product. Make sure you got both. All right, let's dive into the rankings now. This went live on Thursday on my Patreon, and then got the OBP coming up as well. Drop top 500 prospect rankings earlier in the week. Redraft will come out over the weekend. So a lot of rankings updates here. We're about right around a month into the season or a little more. And we already got a bunch of risers, followers, notable movers. You got some really big names off the slow start. Some surprising names as well. But let's start with, I wanted to get to four names that kind of dropped down my list a decent bit in this month, starting with Pete Crow Armstrong of the Chicago Cubs, slashing 241, 307, 362 right now in 128 plate appearances, three home runs, six steals, so still giving you a little bit there, but really kind of carrying over the second half struggles he had last year. If you recall, PCA was off to a phenomenal start. Before the All-Star break, had 25 home runs, 27 steals. After the All-Star break, 6-8 with a 216, 262, 372 slash line. So really just a continuation of that. PCA is still a very valuable real-life player for the Cubs. Obviously, one of the best defenders in the entire game. The value he brings from being a truly elite, top of the top scale defensive center fielder is massive to the Cubs. He's also a phenomenal athlete. High sprint speed, 93rd percentile there. So he still brings a lot of good to the Cubs. But for fantasy purposes, it's been really tough, and you can really boil that down to the fact that he's incredibly aggressive, and that's gotten even worse this year. It's a 45.8% chase rate. He was right around 41.5% in both 2024 and 2025, and that's jumped even higher. That's just tough to sustain offensive success when you're chasing that often. We've seen that happen many times before. These guys with higher chase rates causing notable peaks and valleys, and usually more valleys than peaks. And then that's what we're seeing with PCA. Are the contact rates terrible? No. He's 80.5% zone contact, just a hair over 70% overall. Yes, those are both below average, but they're not, in the red flag territory, as I like to call it. Neither one of those are super concerning. It just simply boils down to he doesn't draw a lot of walks, though he is walking a little bit more than usual, but just doesn't draw a lot of walks. The K rate is up near 30%. So you got to wonder, can PCA find some middle ground here? I don't think it's fair to even expect him to come close to that first half production last year. I mean, everything was going right for PCA. So I don't think he's ever going to be, he was on like a near 40-40 pace before the All-Star break last year. So I don't think any of us should be expecting him to return to that level. But can he find somewhere in the middle of like the first half last year and the second half last year, or the first half last year and the first half this year? Like, where he's just like, all right, maybe he's more of like a upper to, 15 to 20 homer guy with 30 steals. Is the average ever going to be good? No, probably not. I think he chases too much to do that. He's been kind of consistently in that 240-ish range, give or take. 2024, he was 237. 2025, 247. This year, 241. That's probably a fair, range to expect. 240, give or take. OBP is never going to be great. I mean, he's 307 right now. Probably never rises above, being just over 300. Probably be under 300 some seasons as well. But I do think he's going to get it going a little bit from here. Again, not to, first half of 2025 levels, but he's actually hitting the ball harder than he ever has right now. It's a 91.2 mile an hour average exit velocity. That's a career high. 46.8% hard hit rate. That is also a career high. But his angles have not been as great this year. That's why the barrel rate has dropped from 13% last year to 7.5% this year. You see that the pull air rate went from a little over 30% to down to around 20%. Air rate has dropped from 66.5% to 54.5%, so 12% more ground balls. He's still pulling at a high clip, but just not getting the ball in the air as frequently. So, if he can get back to elevating a bit more as he did last year, and I think that can really unlock some more of that power because, again, he's hitting them all hard and the contact rates aren't terrible. So PCA, in my opinion, is definitely better than last year, second half, and this year, first half. Like, this is kind of like the low end of what you're going to get, through the peaks and valleys. Like, this is the valleys, but there's going to be some peaks. Maybe not early 2025 peaks, but I still think he's going to get it going. But is he that, top 40 dynasty asset stud? No. I think he's still a top 100 guy. Like, I still have him, well inside my top 100. Again, he's still in my top 70. But I think in that 50 to 60 range where he could settle in, a guy that could still give you 20 home runs, 30 steals, hopefully an average that stays in that 240 range, doesn't, drop down to 210 or anything like that. So I think he's a... I'm not like running out to get PCA, and I actually sold him this offseason in my home keeper league. But I'm not opposed to buying low right now. I think there's some skeptics out there kind of wondering, was last year's first half just completely fluky? And no, I don't believe it was completely fluky. I don't think it's going to happen again, but there's still a talented player in here. So if you can get him for like a non-top 100 price tag, which I think might be possible right now, just given how badly he started the season, I would at least kick the tires on buying low on Pete Crow Armstrong. Another outfielder off to a pretty rough start, Jarren Duran. He dropped actually out of my top 100, barely. He went from 37 to 101. And Duran was actually a guy that I was just looking to buy this past offseason. Yeah, that's not looking great so far. But I think last year, people, like, the perceived value seemed to drop more than it should have last year. And yeah, that looks great now in retrospect. But at the time, this offseason, I mean, people were talking about his 2025 like it was a bad year. And while it wasn't as good as his 2024, it was still, 86 runs, 16 home runs, 24 steals, 256, 332, 442. I mean, that's not otherworldly. That's not as great as 2024, but that's nothing to scoff at either. That's still a solid season. So I thought he'd bounce back a little bit, maybe, be somewhere in the middle of 2024 and 2025. Obviously, that has not happened. Is it more to do with skills? Is it more to do with the fact that his playing time hasn't been super consistent? No, it has been a little more recently. Over the last week or two, but by and large this year, he's been getting more off days than usual because of that outfield logjam that the Red Sox currently have. So, especially against lefties, he'll get, a day off, more frequently than not. But, the metrics are still, fine. Like, he's still running a barrel rate right around 9.5%, which is where he's been each of the last three seasons. Average EV over 90 miles an hour. Again, same thing, each of the last three seasons, over 90 miles an hour there. Hard hit rates around 42%. So quality of contact as a whole is still above average, but the issue is that the contact rates have dropped. In 2022 through 2025, he was above average in zone contact between 83 and 86%. Last year was 83.5%. This year, it's not a terrible mark, but it has dropped to 79%. He's chasing a little bit more. Chase rates dropped, has risen 3.5%. And his overall contact rate is the worst of his career at 64.4%. So whiffing more often, chasing more often. I still think there's a decent player here. At this point, though, it feels like a change of scenery would do Duran. It'd be wonderful for his career. It's been a little rough in Boston. There's been some rough parts for him, obviously. But I think maybe getting traded, which I think could happen. I think Boston could blow it up pretty soon here. They've already fired all the coaches and stuff. So, wholesale changes could be, or more wholesale changes could be coming to this Red Sox team. So I could see Duran traded, absolutely. So maybe that could be the best case for his value. At this point, what am I looking to do with him in Dynasty? I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mode. Because, again, I think there's a better player here. He's still, fast guy, 96 percentile sprint speed. There's still a talented player in here. Bat speed is 78th percentile, good quality of contact. But I don't know if that rebound is going to happen in Boston. But is it wise to buy low and then try and then hope for, that value to increase due to a fresh start, change of scenery, helping him out? I don't know if that's wise. And in the area, I have Duran in actually the same, my home keeper league, and I still have him. I had a few trade offers out there. I was trying to kind of get rid of him for some draft picks or, for a pitcher, and it's nobody bit. So still have him. I'm kind of this. He's on my bench most days at this point. And so I've been kind of starting other guys in my, outfield and utility spots just because Duran ain't giving you much. He's hitting 170, 231, 250, one bomb, five steals. Not a lot of good on the surface here for Duran. So I'm not out on Duran by any means. He's probably going to continue falling. If you can get him for, like a top 150, price tag, something like that, I'm not opposed, but until he gets out of Boston or the situation, they trade somebody else and, he can kind of get more consistent playing time, which again has happened recently. So maybe there's a ray of hope there, but
I'm just not sure that big turnaround is going to come as a member of the Boston Red Sox. All right. Couple of infielders now, starting with Luke Kuechel. Another guy that I was really high on. I think a lot of people were really high on entering the season. He was a trendy draft pick in redraft leagues, a pretty trendy dynasty buy, but that has just not worked out well so far. He dropped from 74 to 119 in this update for me. It's really the big thing for Kuechel. He is not impacting the ball whatsoever. On one hand, contact is still good. He's well above average contact. He's actually improved his contact rates from last year. 93.5% in zone, 86.3% overall. Chase rate has gone up a little bit, but still better than league average chase rate. Strikeout rate only 16.5%. And he has a 90th percentile sprint speed. So still some good in the profile, mainly, again, contact and approach, but the quality of contact has just been so poor that it hasn't mattered whatsoever. 3.1% barrel rate, 84.1 mile an hour average EV. His max is only 105, and he has a 23.7% hard hit rate. So with Kuechel, he's never been known as a power guy. And I don't think anybody was expecting him to magically become a 25 homer guy, but I think myself and probably a lot of other people thought, all right, give me 15, give me somewhere in the mid-teens, And to go along with the good average and all the steals, like he could be a 15-30 guy with a high average. It's kind of where I thought. And that's kind of what we saw last year. And he was on, you know, like a 13-14 homer pace as a rookie and had 14 steals. So he's on, you know, over a 40 steal pace. He hit 302 with a 382 OBP. Like, all right, you know, that's kind of what we expected he could be over a full season. But the quality of contact has dropped across the board from being below average to bottom of the barrel. He's at a third percentile hard hit rate, third percentile average EV. You know, X slug ain't doing him any favors either at 327. So it's not like he's been just unlucky or anything like that. Like he's just not impacting the ball, plain and simple. That is the issue with Kieschel. So can he correct that? I mean, we've seen guys add power. Like Bryce Terang is a big example of that. We've seen guys add power, but, you know, he's way down there. And, you know, you can't be this low in quality of contact. Like, tell me another guy that's been, like, bottom of the barrel in quality of contact that's been a top 100 guy overall for fantasy. It just – it's very, very rare. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head. You know, like Jacob Wilson's down here, and that really limits his value. At least Kieschel runs. Wilson doesn't really run. But Wilson's also got his hitting for a much higher average than Kieschel is right now. So I don't know. Kieschel's a hard one for me right now because I'm not out by any means, but I'm skeptical because I need to see that quality of contact be there at least a little bit. Just don't be one of the worst quality of contact guys in the league. That's all I'm asking. If you're below average, Kieschel, fine. But don't be third percentile hard hit, third percentile average EV. Because right now, like, are you even a 10-homer guy at this point? I'm not so sure. He's still only 23 years old. He's still playing regularly. You know, the contact, the defense, the speed is keeping him in there. You know, he's an above-average defensive second baseman, you know, though the arm strength ain't great. But he's still providing value to the Twins in other ways. And it's not like they're, you know, a contending team this year. So they can, you know, afford to keep running him out there. And hopefully he works through his offensive struggles. But I think it's a tough investment right now to go after Luke Kieschel because those quality of contact concerns have me a bit hesitant. So not out by any means. He's still only 23, you know, but he's definitely one that's been falling down my rankings this season and will continue to do so until he starts impacting the ball at least a little bit more. And the other guy might be the most peculiar, you know, faller of these four that I'm talking about in this episode. That's Michael Busch. What the bleep has happened to Michael Busch this season? And you look under the hood, it's pretty peculiar. So on the surface, 132 plate appearances. He's slashing 193, 295, 281, two home runs. All right. Now let's pop the hood. That's already bad. But let's pop the hood. Let's start with approach. 11.4% walk rate, career best. 22.7% strikeout rate, career best. All right, those are fine. You know, chase rate has gone up, but it's still around league average, so no issues there. Whiff rate, 24.8%, career best mark. Zone contact rate, 85.2%, career best mark. So, you know, so far you're like, this is great. He's having career best approach, career best contact, even better than last year in his breakout year for the Cubs. But then we get to the quality of contact. Did he just forget how to hit the ball hard? Like, what is this is so odd for a guy that had been trending up in quality of contact to all of a sudden not only stop the upward trend, but completely fall off the cliff. It's just super odd. You know, he had been – so these are his quality of contact year over year. In 2023, 89.1 mile an hour average EV – and then that went up to 89.9, 92.2 last year, down to 85.2 miles an hour this year. Barrel rate, 6.5, 11.2, 17.1, 8.2. Hard hit rate, you know, 50%, and that was only in 46 batted balls, but then went to 39.9%, jumped to 47.3% last year, down to 32.9%. That's a nearly 15% drop in hard hit rate. For a guy that had been, you know, even in the minor leagues, like always an above average to plus quality of contact hitter. to all of a sudden being one of the worst in the league. Well, it's average EV. Yeah. 7th percentile there. He is 20th percentile in hard hit rate. Barrel rate's actually close to league average. But, I mean, what has gone on? This is really good. It's hard to really say why. I mean, he's still putting the bat on the ball. He's not striking out at an alarming clip. Like, again, the rest of the profile was pretty good. But he's just not driving the ball as much as he was last year or really as he ever has. So I don't know. It's weird. Like, I can't give like a reason as to why the quality of contact has fallen off so drastically this year. He's also hitting a lot more ground balls, which isn't helping. The ground ball rate's jumped 12%. So air rate's down from 63.8 to 51.8. Pull rate's down about 5.5%, and pull air rate down nearly 10%. So not only is he not hitting the ball as hard, he's not hitting the ball as, you know, at ideal angles to maximize power in general. So that's why he's got 2 home runs right now in 132 plate appearances. And neither one of those were pulled. One was the center field and one was the left center. So I don't know. Is he hurt? I have not heard anything. Maybe he's playing through an injury, which wouldn't make a lot of sense because the Cubs have a lot of options, mainly Jonathan Long in waiting in AAA. So if Bush was really, you know, working through something, it would make so much sense to just put him on the IL, bring up Long. I mean, they have AAA for them is pretty loaded right now. You know, they get Kevin Alcantara down there as well, Pedro Ramirez. They have guys that come in and, you know, handle, you know, they could still fill out a good lineup here if they had to put Michael Bush on the IL. So I'm not sure if that's the case. I'm not going to speculate on injury, but I don't know. I can't think of any other thing that would cause this. Like, I don't think the skills for Bush have just eroded over an offseason, especially when he was on an upward trend. It wasn't like he was on a downward trend and then the trend got worse. He was going the other way. So I'm buying Michael Bush until I hear a definitive reason, like, oh, he's got a nagging wrist injury or something like that. Until I hear something like that, you know, I'm going to still look to buy Michael Bush. I mean, I believe in what we saw from him last year, and I think he's going to bounce back. It's a rough look right now, obviously, but I think you can get him for a pretty realistic price tag. So, yeah, I'm 100% looking to buy Michael Bush. I think he's much better than this. I believe in last year, and I think he's going to be turning it around here pretty soon as the weather gets warmer here, at least I hope, as I do have a share of Michael Bush, maybe 2 shares in Dynasty League. So hopefully he can turn it around, and this is the low point of the season for him. All right, let's go over to some risers now, you know, starting with, you know, kind of the 3 bigger, you know, sexier names to talk about here. I think the 3 notable names out of all these names we're talking about today, Ben Rice, Sal Stewart, and Cam Schlittler. Let's start with Ben Rice. Because if you saw my tweet when I put out my rankings on Thursday, Rice is now inside my top 25. Is that maybe a little high? Sure, some might think that. I don't. Is it bold? Sure, but Ben Rice has backed it up. I mean, he was obviously a very trendy, hypey name. Hypey? That's a new word. But hyped up name is probably a better way to say that. You know, this offseason, his ADP rose to insane heights in redraft leagues. Everyone wanted Ben Rice. I was pumping him up, and I was far from the only analyst that was. But even the most, you know, even the biggest Rice supporter, you know, and I was probably one of the bigger ones, probably didn't expect him to be this good. You know, we thought he'd be great, but he's joining the elite. And I wasn't sure he'd become like a top 25 overall guy. But now, you know, after the metrics last year, the metrics this year, the overall performance this year, everything about Rice is trending in the positive way drastically right now. Surface stats, 327, 443, 714 slash line, 10 home runs, and 122 plate appearances. And hey, he can hit lefties. You see that, Aaron Boone? Rice can hit lefties. A 370, 452, 815 slash line with 4 bombs and 31 plate appearances against lefties. You know, metrics are even been probably even more impressive than the stat line, which is kind of hard to say, but it really is the case because everything, there's so much red on his Savant page. Quality of contact is phenomenal. 20.3% barrel rate, 95 mile an hour average EV, 60.9% hard hit rate. He's nearly doubled his walk rate from 9.4 to 17.2%. K rate has gone up, you know, not alarming at all. It's around 25%, so no huge worries there. You know, he's still making plenty of contact. He's above average, both in zone and overall. Chase rate's down to 20%. I mean, he's been right around 20, 21, 22% every year of his career. So the fact that he's still above average contact with elite quality of contact and, you know, really good pull air rate as well, 53.5% pull rate, 23.2% pull air. He is hitting more ground balls in general, but still right around a league average air rate. But when he does get it in the air, he's getting it to that pull side pretty consistently, which obviously means good things at Yankee Stadium. So at this point, he is in that top tier of dynasty first baseman with Kurtz, with Vlad. He's behind them for me right now. As again, Kurtz, I have Kurtz is 15, Vladdy is 19, and Rice is 24, but that's the top tier. And this next guy is kind of like fringy in that top tier, but more, probably more so in tier two, but he's threatening to get into it as well. But I'll get this guy in a second. But Rice, I think, definitely has joined that top tier. And you might be able to make a case. I mean, as crazy as it sounds, could you make a case for Rice over Vlad right now? I don't think it's crazy. I mean, I do have Vlad ahead, but Vlad's hitting for a high average right now. He's still hitting the ball super hard, but he's still hitting too many ground balls, and he's limited due to his home run total. You know, Rice is hitting for average and getting to those home runs. So is it crazy to say that Rice could leapfrog Vlad here? And that's no slight at Vlad, but man, you got to give me the home runs, Vlad. Even just give me the 20s where you've been at for a lot. But if you're going to give me less than that, I can't give you, you know, that top 20 ranking anymore. So maybe he falls out of the top 20 and Rice jumps into the top 20. That's not crazy to say that that could happen at some point in the season, maybe even next month's update. So, you know, Rice, if any doubters are out there, any doubt should have been squashed with how he has started the season. Not only did he live up to the hype, he blew through the doors. Like, he blew the doors right off the hinges and is proving that he's legit. And not only is he legit, he is a legit stud. Ben Rice is legit, top 25. Might be a little bit bold, but I firmly believe in it. The other guy that I was just alluding to, Sal Stewart. What a start to the season for Sal Stewart. I have him up to 30. You know, he was, what was he last update? So 104 last update, up to 30 this update. Again, might be bold, but I've always been a Sal Stewart guy. You know, even when I was ranking him as a prospect, I've always been a Sal Stewart guy, and the metrics are really good right now. Quality of contact, 21% barrel rate, 91.5 mile an hour average EV, 46% hard hit rate, you know, walk and K rate, very good is there as well, 13% walk rate, 18.5% strikeout rate. He's stealing bags too. He's got 7 steals this year to go along with 9 home runs and a 281, 373, 570 slash line. You know, contact skills, you may not quite as good there as Rice is, but he's right around league average in terms of overall contact rate. Zone is a little below league average, but I'm not concerned by that whatsoever. You know, Great American Ballpark, where he plays half of his games, notable BABIP boost, especially with his level of quality of contact. I think he can make that work and still hit for a high average. He's hitting 281 right now. You know, the XBA, XLUG are backing up his performance. They're almost identical to the decimal point of his surface stats. 281 average and a 570 slug, 282 XBA and a 569 XLUG. So only 0.001 off on both of those. Again, the approach is good. You know, the batted ball angles are solid. You know, especially he gets the ball into the pretty consistently. Pull error rate, the 16%, that's fine. He would actually take off if he pulled the ball more. His pull rate's only 31.5%. Last year as a rookie, it was 52.5%. But still, he's on pace for over 30 home runs right now. He's actually on pace for over 40 home runs, actually, I should say. He's on pace for 30 steals. Is he a burner? No. Is he an above-average runner? No. He's a smart runner. And he's shown, and even in the minor leagues, he was a guy that would steal, you know, handful of bags here, handful of bags there. So could he be a 15 to 20 steal guy? Absolutely. Early in his career, I think he absolutely could be. So could he put up a 40-20 year this year? That's not crazy to say. Maybe he falls short of that 40 home runs. But even like, let's say it's 35-17 with a decent amount of runs. You know, he's got plenty of RBI already. He's already at the 29 RBI. So if let's say he gets up to like 90, 95 runs, 105, 110 RBI with a 270 average. But let's put that all together. So let's say it's 270, you know, with 95 runs, 35 home runs, 110 RBI and 17, 18 steals. That looks pretty damn good. And I think that's not crazy to say that that could be his end of season outcome. The skills are there. That's why I don't like him quite as much as Ben Rice, but Stewart is legit. He had a really good minor league career. The underlying metrics are pretty good. No real red flags in the profile. Good ball, great ballpark. You know, good lineup around him. It's a fun lineup in Cincinnati. Got some good ball players there. Some talented young players there, like Ellie De La Cruz, for example. So Stewart is a definite buy for me. I know it'd be buying high at this point, but this is one of the scenarios where I'm okay buying high because I am a believer in Sal Stewart. And I think he's here to stay as a top 40 dynasty asset. You know, and then Cam Schlittler, the big pitching riser this update. You know, he's now a top 10 dynasty starting pitcher for me. You know, I tweeted that out earlier, you know, today on Thursday as well, that I now have Schlittler as a top 10 dynasty starting pitcher. And he's above some big names. He jumped a lot of notable names. Now, obviously, pitcher is always super deep at the top, but I think it's warranted with how he started his career. You know, this year, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball. So for my dynasty starting pitcher rankings, it goes Skeens 1, Scooble 2, Crochet, I still have it 3. I'm not super concerned there. Yamamoto's at 4, Christopher Sanchez 5, Hunter Brown 6, Nolan McLean 7, Chase Burns 8, then Cam Schlittler 9, Gilbert 10, Wu 11, Reagans 12, Mizierowski 13, Yuri Perez 14, though he did fall 15 spots in my overall this month, kind of a so-so start to the season for him, and then Max Fried in the 15 spot. So two Yankees in the top 15, but Schlittler, man, he's been a beast. Last year, came up and excelled as a rookie, 2.96 ERA, 1.22 WHIP, 84 strikeouts in 73 innings. This was 14 starts, then dominated my Red Sox in the postseason, and he's shown that that was just the start for him. You know, this year in 7 starts, 1.51 ERA, 0.74 WHIP, 3.8% walk rate, down from 10.2% last year. That's huge. And then a 31.5% K rate, which is up about 4% from last year. So, yeah, that walk rate going down. I mean, walks were never a huge issue for Schlittler, but the fact that he's kind of transformed into a well above average command and control guy is huge for his value because the stuff is really good. He locates it well. And you look at, you know, for the most part, you look at his heat maps, they're all pretty tight, especially his fastballs, the four-seamer cutter, and sinker. You know, that four-seamer, he dials it up to 97.6 on average. Sinker is 97.1. Cutter, 93.7. You know, and that those are close to 90%. I think it's actually quick math here. 90.1% of his pitches are those three. And they're all over 93 miles an hour. So he's coming at you with a lot of velocity, and it's just hard for hitters to square it up. The four-seamer has a 175 batting average against, cutter 094, sinker 154, all with slug allowed under 300. He gets plenty of whiffs on that fastball. It's actually his best whiff rate offering, that four-seamer, 37.5%. Also has a 37% whiff rate on the curveball, which is, you know, his fourth most used offering at 8.2%. So he's really fastball heavy, but he'll mix in the occasional breaking ball. But hey, he's making it work. You know, it's a lot of velocity, but the fact that he just commands it so well, and then the movement, the combination of like movement profile and command for him is really good. So it's a you know, recipe that's working for him. You know, he has a career 2.43 ERA. We're now 21 starts into his career. You know, the fact that he's, you know, striking out a lot of batters here, walk rate is super low. I mean, there's a lot to like here, and I don't see any reason to kind of poo-poo the start to his career. I mean, maybe this isn't fully sustainable, but, you know, everything under the hood is pretty damn good. He gets ground balls as well, 46.5% ground ball rate. It's hard to really nitpick anything with Cam Switzer right now. Chase rate is nearly 40%. That's pretty – I mean, that's – impressive regardless of your pitch mix. But when you're in the zone so frequently with, you know, with fastballs, like, but he can still get guys to chase with not using that many secondaries. But so when he does go outside the zone, he's getting those hitters to chase. You know, it's just so super impressive how Schlittler operates. It's above average whiff rate. In zone whiff rate is 23%. That's better than league average. Just everywhere you look in the profile is either good or really good for Cam Schlittler. So, yeah, I am 100% buying this, and I think he's an ace moving forward. I think it'd be almost foolish not to have him as an ace at this point. So, top 10 for Cam Schlittler. Two more names here. The other big pitching riser, and probably the biggest in terms of the number of ranking spots that this guy jumped up, is Jose Soriano with the Los Angeles Angels. He jumped from 366 to 148. Tough to figure out where I wanted to put him. Part of me wanted to go higher, but I'm trying not to go too crazy yet. But it's hard not to when you look at the stats Soriano has put together in his first seven starts of this season. So I'm actually going to say things a little bit differently in order of stats here. I'll start with like the K and walk rates. 9.8% walk rate, 30.1% K rate. So both, you know, striking out a lot of guys, keeping that walk rate right around, you know, 10% where he's been for the last three seasons. So nice to see that big walk rate, I mean, you know, the big K rate jump while keeping the walk rate in the same area. Then you get to the ratios. 0.84 ERA and a 0.94 whip. Is that sustainable? Absolutely not. You know, his xERA is 309 right now. But I do think that a notable step forward has been taken here with Soriano. And there was a lot to like with him before this season too. Like, the stuff was pretty good. He's just finally putting it all together now. And I think the biggest improvement is on that sinker. 290 batting average against last year, only 156 this year. His knuckle curve is very good. One of the better breaking balls in all of baseball. 167 batting average against and a 49% whiff rate. Also has a 48% whiff rate and a 0.69 batting average against on his splitter. That's huge as well. You know, and those two were right around 40% last year in terms of whiff rate. You know, knuckle curve was 43%. Splitter was 39.5%. So they're both up there pushing 50% now. And he has three pitches under a 170 batting average against out of his four most used offerings. And then those three pitches combined are about 71% of his overall pitch usage. And those are his sinker, his splitter, and his knuckle curve. So really, him leaning on those has been huge. He's still getting plenty of ground balls too. You know, it is down about 10%, the ground ball rate, but it's still 56%, which is a very good ground ball rate for a pitcher. And he's missing bats too. Like, you don't see a 56% ground ball rate in a 34% whiff rate very often, but that's what he has this year, which it makes sense too. The fact that the sinker's getting ground balls and those the splitter and the knuckle curve are getting those whiffs, I'm buying this. I mean, it's really impressive. Again, is he going to be an ace all season? I'd probably bet against that, but there's a lot of legitimacy here to this breakout. The stuff is really good. He gets ground balls. He gets whiffs. I mean, this guy is flying up rankings, and I think he's could maybe be a guy that's like solidified himself being like a top 25 starter moving forward by the end of the season. So, yeah, he kind of come down. There's going to be some regression here. He can't sustain a sub-1 ERA. It's just not possible in this day and age. But Soriano, definitely a guy whose value is trending up in a big, big way right now. And you know, the last thing on him, allowing a lot less hard contact. That was actually one of his issues, though the stuff was really good. It was kind of flashy stuff. But he allowed a 91.5-mile-an-hour average EV and a 48% hard hit rate last year. Those are down to about 88 miles an hour and 33.5%. So that's huge. So, yep, I'm pretty much buying Jose Soriano. Last name I wanted to talk about in this episode, Munetaka Murakami. Tied for the league lead with 12 home runs. Very interesting profile to start. Basically, everything we thought about Murakami has been amplified, both positively and negatively, both sides of the ball. The pros and the cons have been amplified to the max. So quality of contact, I mean, obviously, tied for the league lead in home runs, and he's been hammering the ball. 21.5% barrel rate, 63% hard hit rate, 95.2-mile-an-hour average EV, X slug of 565, overall slug 564. Those are basically the same, but he's hitting 236 because the contact rates are super low, and he has one of the worst contact rates in all baseball at 56.8%. Zone contact is 66.5%, but he does not chase much. Yes, he has a much better chase rate than league average at 21.5%. And he's walking in an 18.4% clip. So the fact that he's not going outside the zone too often actually helps. You know, the fact that you'd see these contact rates, I think he'd be hitting 100 or something like that. So those are just downright terrible contact rates. But he doesn't chase. And when he makes contact, he does damage. But still, he's hitting 236. Now, this is very format dependent. If you're in OBP format right now, 375 OBP, 12 home runs, 22 runs scored. Like, great. But average leagues, he does take a little bit of a hit. And I'm not sure we ever see him really hit for an average higher than where he's at now. Could he maybe get to like 250? Sure, I'd probably cap it there. I just don't see like 260, 270 with these contact rates. But the power has been as advertised and then some. Like, he had huge power in Japan. That was the calling card. That's been immediately translated over to the majors. He's at an 82nd percentile bat speed. So everything there has been phenomenal. One of the best power hitters already in the game. So again, OBP formats, he's top 100. But for average leagues, I can't go top 100 yet. But he did rise from 222 to 137 in this update. So again, if you can stomach the 230, 240 average, I think you're going to be pretty happy with the counting stats that he can provide. Obviously, not in the stolen base department, but you know, the home runs, the RBI, 23 RBI, and 22 runs scored. So maybe he gives you, you know, 90 runs, 90 RBIs, and 40 home runs this year. You know, hopefully he can just keep the average respectable. But yeah, phenomenal start to the season and to his major league career for Munetaka Murakami. So again, he's, you know, I can see buying or selling. It just depends on what you like, what profile you like, what format you're in. Again, average versus OBP is a big difference here. But I can see selling high. So I think you can get a top 100 price tag for him right now. Maybe you flip him into, you know, a buy low on someone. I can see you doing that. Like a big name that started off slow. I don't know if you get like a Pete Alonso or anything like that, but you know, I wouldn't be opposed to selling. But again, if you're in OBP formats or you're fine with the 240 average, just want that power, I think all of that power is legit. So I'm fine holding as well. So a lot of variables there, but, you know, very good start to his career for Murakami, a guy that could, you know, flirt with 50 home runs as a rookie, which is just really, really cool to see. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode. You know, it's been fun going through my prospect and dynasty rankings these last two episodes. I'll be back with you again on Tuesday with another episode, and I have a guest lined up for that one. But until then, everyone take care.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
Discover what BetterHelp Online Therapy can do for you. Visit BetterHelp.com today.